next year, Skeleton Witch is going to be 10 years old. What can you say about that, and are you guys planning anything?
I feel old, that's all I'll say. No, well, after this tour, the first thing we're doing is writing and recording a new record, so that's big. That's the top priority. But in addition to that, we will definitely do some kind of, like, 10-year anniversary tour, you know. We don't know what yet, but we'll do something. Absolutely. But, God, it time flies.
Awesome. Describe your sound.
Okay. You know, we typically just call it metal. Of course, that doesn't do much for people who love to throw a lot of adjectives around and, like, really compartmentalize everything.
Right.
So, to not be so... To be a little more descriptive, I suppose. There's a lot of 80s thrash in there, 90s death metal, black metal, and rock and roll. And I know that might sound weird that there's all that stuff in there, but I do think if you actually listen to one of our records all the way through, you probably will find all those elements in there. I mean, there's new wave of British heavy metal style guitar harmonies, and then within the same song, there's blast beats and tremolo picks, sort of black metal stylings and things. So we really... We like a lot of different styles of metal and rock and roll and other music as well. So we sort of we don't limit ourselves in the sense that if this riff sounds too much like a doom metal band or a thrash metal band only or not this or that. You know, if we like the music that we're writing for into the riffs or the songs that are forming, then we don't really care so much where they fall within the realm of heavy music. You know, we're not like it just needs to be more thrashy or this needs to be more this. Right. So we sort of let it go. You know, we sort of let it take us where it does when we're writing. If we're into a part and it sounds more epic and a little more mid-tempo, we'll go there and we don't care. We're not worried about keeping it a certain way other than keeping ourselves interested in the music that we're doing.
I gotcha. How have you been able to grow as a band from the self-released first album to Forever Abomination?
Hard work. Easily. That's the one thing. I mean, when we self-released the first album, as you mentioned, and an EP... And did full U.S. tours, East and West Coast, that we booked ourselves. Kicked, fought, and screamed to get in front of people and busted our ass, you know, slept in a pickup truck, did a tour in a month in a pickup truck, you know.
Wow.
We did all kinds of stuff like that, sending out demos and also the first album that we self-released and the EP we self-released to labels, you know, before we got hooked up with Prosthetic. That's really what it is putting in the time, lots of hard work and loving what you do. That was another thing that helped us get where we are, because I do believe that if you're coming from a genuine place, it sort of shows. You know, people can smell bullshit a mile away. Mm-hmm. You know, people who are just trying for a minute to see if something sticks. You know,
Agreed.
Let's just try this metal band. Let's see how far we can get, you know.
Agreed.
As sort of like they're not really that they're not that into it. You know, like, no, one day they're in this kind of band. The next day they're going to try metal because they feel like it's popular. So, you know, loving what you do and believing in it. But then... Lots of sweat. that's really what helped get us there. There wasn't a moment where one thing just clicked. We put out an album and boom, we were touring with Danzig or something. You know, it didn't happen like that.
He handpicked you guys for that tour, correct?
He did.
It was the 2007 Blackest of the Black or two?
Yeah. You know what's funny? I forget what the year, but it was the Blackest of the Black. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we ended up through sort of making friends, connections, and stuff like that, meeting somebody that worked for Glenn. And we gave him a couple copies of it. And a year later, he had obviously gotten around to listening to it.
That's awesome.
And liked it. And he hooked us up.
It's good to know that actually some of the big ones actually do listen to the demos people give them.
And we couldn't believe it. And when we met him and hung out with him, he confirmed that too. It wasn't just like, hey,
awesome.
People told you that. He sat down with us and talked to us and he told us that he dug the record and that he was the reason we were on it. And it wasn't some behind-the-scenes bullshit. And it's like, wow. People still do that. That's awesome to know that somebody like in his position, you know, is still willing to just take out a band just because he likes their fucking record, not because he's worried about, you know, people at labels influencing, you know, people like, hey, I have this new band. You need to take them out. They need to be on the road. You know, there's a lot of bullshit like that. And Glenn doesn't really roll that way, and it's awesome.
You guys were DIY for a very long time, and in some aspects you still are. Mm-hmm. What tips do you have for bands trying to just get out there and like do all their tours themselves and get all their merch together without any label support? What kind of tips do you have for them to be able to still do their dreams without a label?
I would say that's tough. One thing, you gotta have thick skin. If you're gonna be doing it yourself, it's not gonna be easy. You know, it's hard to... There's a lot of things you have to organize to tour. Everything from the merch to the driving logistics to the show, getting the shows and bands on shows and everything. Just a lot of shit you have to deal with. So, as much as it sucks, be prepared to spend a lot of time not playing your instrument because you have to deal with so much other stuff besides just, you know, just the music. And it's sad that I'm saying that, but I mean, that's the most important thing, is having great songs. But once you're done writing them and recording them, a lot of people think it stops there. Like, oh, right, someone else will take care of this. And they won't. You need to. You need to be on top of the business end of things. You know, be on time to venues. Treat other bands with respect. Be good with promoters, you know. Back up your word. Don't cancel shows on people. Like, there's a lot of etiquette and sort of ethic to doing it in addition. You know, once you have the songs, that's great. But how many great bands have there been that, you know, they're classic albums or like little hidden gems? Wow, this band was great. They never went anywhere. What happened? And there's could be, you know, any, you know, myriad of reasons that it happened. But if you stay on top of the you know, business side of things and professional side of things too, as well as the musical side of things, that's going to help you in the long run as well.
And record label advice for bands just getting signed that really just want to go through with it, think that it's the answer. What kind of record label advice do you have for them?
I would say one of the biggest things is, don't expect the record label to do everything for you. That they're there to help. You know, the way we view it is, our ship was already sailing, you know, even though, you know, maybe not very far, but we were doing it. We had albums already out. We were already touring. We all, you know, we opened for bigger bands. We'd done that all on our own. So when we signed, what we expected was them to sort of just put a little more wind in the sails, not take over the ship and do all that stuff for us. We expected maybe them to make connections, you know, to people we couldn't get a hold of to try to get on a bigger tour.
Right.
Or maybe, get better distribution. You know, we could sell a record online in a few spots, but we can't get it in Best Buy or one of those. Or even a lot of cool indie record stores. It takes a lot of time to sit around and look them up, find them, mail all the stuff out, and the label, you know, takes care of doing that kind of stuff too. Mm-hmm. So strategically, they help you in a lot of ways, but don't expect them to take over, and don't hand them everything either, because keep control of your merchandise, your artwork, all those things. That those are important. You know, don't let them just draw up shitty t-shirts for you, you know. Like, we come up with all of our own t-shirts, you know, all of our artwork, we have the final say, music, everything. Like, they can give their 2 cents, but we usually just don't listen. You know, we have the final say, what songs get recorded, how they're recorded, who they're recorded with, what the t-shirts look like, everything. So, you know, we didn't sacrifice any control, but we just let them sort of help continue, sort of push us on the way. Like, hey guys, here's a little extra help. We know some people. We have distribution. We can help you do what you're doing on a slightly bigger scale, but they let us keep doing what we were doing. And so the hard work doesn't actually stop. You should really double it once you're on a label.
Wow.
To be honest. I mean, look at Nuclear Blast, Metal Blade, Prosthetic. Look at any of their rosters, and look at how many bands there are on there, and look at how many are not on there anymore, or how many are still on there, but you're not hearing anything from them. And why is that?
Mm-hmm.
It could be a lot of reasons, but if a band doesn't work for themselves, the label won't work for them either, and then you're stuck in the contract, and you're just sitting there rotting. They help, you know. Maybe more succinctly, labels help bands that help themselves.
Ah.
If you prove that you're going to go out and bust your ass, then they will back you up. Mm-hmm. Whether it's, you know, tour support for a tour that you're not getting paid much on for, you know, to open for a band, or just making connections, or someone approaches the label and says, hey, we need a song for this video game, or hey, we want to do this. Just any number of things that's incoming to the office, they're making decisions as to who's going to do it and who's not on their label, and you're not there for that part of it. And if they know you're going to work hard, then a lot of times, you know, they'll throw it your way or recommend you for stuff.
Makes a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
What could you say you've learned from your touring experiences?
Wow. That's tough because it's so open-ended. I mean, wow. So much. I mean, we've been doing it for, like, as you mentioned, almost 10 years. I mean, plenty of things outside of the music industry, just about life in general, dealing with people, being in close quarters with people, being away from home, and learning how to cope with sort of, you know, the rigors of the road. God, I don't know if I can just tell you anything super specific. I don't really know. Like, do you have anything more specific? Like,
I really don't.
I mean, it's really hard to sum up 10 years of touring and what I've learned in you know, one question.
Also,
but also,
there's different kinds of tours, which kind of flows into the next question. Like,
I mean,
you had the DIY tours here, mm-hmm. and then you've had the regular label book tours that have, you know, they've handled a little bit more for you, like you said, but still not everything, but they've done more for you. So it's kind of hard because there's two different spectrums.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And what have I learned? I mean, I learned a lot about the music business. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about my best friends. I learned a lot about recording from you know, recording so many albums. I've learned
right.
a lot about tour managing and the business and merchandise side of things. You know, I've learned how to go on 2 hours of sleep several nights in a row. You know, all kinds of, you know, logistics for touring in Europe and all that kind of stuff. You know.
Right.
Plenty of things on a human level and on a business and band and musician level too. It's just it's been a long 10 years and also a really short 10 years.
Which tours did you say you learned from the most? The DIY tours or the label organized tours?
You know, I think you learn different things from different tours.
Okay.
And to give you an example, the Danzig Blackest of the Black tour was one of the first large tours we did in big venues, and with that tour, you know, we learned real quick how to be professional, because if you weren't on time or you went over on your set time, they were unplugging you, they were turning you off.
Oh, wow.
You know, they are like,
they were strict, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And any larger tour is. I mean, that's just how it is. I mean, you have that many bands, that much gear, that much stuff going on, it needs to run tight because it's going to fall behind. Once one thing starts to unravel, it all mm-hmm. turns to shit pretty quick. So we learned a lot about promptness, about like sort of respect, you know,
right.
getting out of the way when you needed to, but also standing up for yourself when you need to too,
right,
if you feel like you need to, you know, there's a balance there for sure. So we learned a lot of things in that nature as far as like growing up, mm-hmm. sort of from being on such a big tour and on such a professional level when before then it was very DIY.
Mm-hmm.
But from the DIY tours as well, you learn a lot about how to everything like sort of we mentioned before, from like merchandise to just tour logistics and booking and planning a tour, you know, you learn a lot of how to take care of yourself and do things for yourself on that level that you might not on, say, a larger tour where you show up and a guy hands you a sheet. This is when the doors are. This is what time dinner is. This is what time you play. This is what time your ass better be up the fucking
wow.
stage. This is what time you'll be there tomorrow. Here's a little dressing room for you guys. There's some beer in there. Have a good show. You're like, well, that shit.
Wow.
Like, they took care of that. when you're just rolling on your own, you know, and rolling up to a DIY space, you know, it's the most disorganized. Often it is. Really disorganized. People don't know what's going on. Bands are just randomly loading in and throwing gear in each other's way all over the place. And so you sort of fend for yourself more. So there's things to be learned from both, I think. You know, different things.
What was the recording experience like for Forever Abomination? And how is it different? Well, how has it become gradually different from the first album to the second to the third to this one?
The recording process was great. We recorded with Matt Hyde in Los Angeles, and he is an awesome, awesome guy. We got along with him great. You know, I think he understood what we were going for. In fact, when we showed up, he was like, check out all these Les Pauls I got for you guys to play. And we're like, yes, you know us. You know, it wasn't BC Rich Warlocks and stuff.
Right.
You know, we play, you know, Gibsons, and I play some custom guitars, but we play, our style is a little more old school gear wise and stuff.
Right.
It's like we tune in standard tuning, Marshall tube amps and all that. And I think Matt got that right away because that's the kind of
right.
stuff he was like, check out all this awesome shit I got. I knew you guys would love it. So he sort of understood where we were coming from, but also lent, excuse me, maybe a more big, just bigger, more even clean production
right.
to our sound, which is what we wanted to do. Without making it too sterile or too, you know, computerized. We don't want it to sound like R2-D2 fucking played the parts,
yeah.
you know? But we also didn't want it, we weren't forcing it to sound like it was recorded in 1988, because
right.
it's not anymore, and there's better technology available. We're not trying to pretend we're alive in that time. We want it to sound good. We want you to hear what we're doing within reason, without it sounding
right.
too mechanical. So, in that sense, he was a great fit. And it worked out really well. So the process was fun. It was cool to be in LA for a month and hang out and stuff. That was really fun. We had a good time. As far as that album to the ones before, I mean, each time you record, you learn a little bit more. You know, each time we have a slightly bigger budget, so we have a little more time to be in the studio to make sure everything's where we want it to be. You know. Early on, you know, it's sort of a race against the clock, and you don't entirely know what you're doing. I mean, you have your songs ready and stuff, but you may have... Now we have ideas for mixing and different ideas mm-hmm. in the studio that we didn't even really know about when we first started. You know, we're just younger and
right.
inexperienced going into the studio for the first time. So each time you observe, you learn from the people you record with and sort of bring that experience with you the next time. So there's always stuff to be learned. So in that sense, we had more time,
mm-hmm.
a little more knowledge, and... It worked out really well.
Okay. Now, on the Get Thrash DVD, you guys and a bunch of other bands like Rumble, Stiltskin, Grinder, Municipal Waste, you guys were interviewed also to just talk about that time period.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get, how did that end up coming to fruition?
That's a great question. We did that here in New York, actually.
Really?
Yes, that was a long time ago. And man, we had a day off that day. And I remember we got wasted. Yeah, full disclosure, we were pretty drunk when we did that. Because we had a bunch of other stuff to do that day. And everywhere we went, everyone was giving us beer. I don't remember how. I just remember they contacted us. They just sent us an email and said, hey guys, we're doing this thrash documentary, and you guys have a pretty big thrash influence, and sort of mix in some other elements, and we'd like to have you guys talk about thrash. So we were like, okay. So tell us when and where. And yeah, that's really just how it happened. They just sent us an email.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's funny. I forgot about that.
Have there been any new albums that you've heard this year, or have you been pretty busy to really not get around to that?
To be honest, I have been pretty busy, which I know is a cop-out. I know that's lame. But I also, a lot of the stuff I just moved and set up my turntable again, which had been out of commission for a long time. So when that happened, I just started busting out old records listening to so much old stuff. But we've also been on the road a lot. So as far as that goes, we don't have too much time to pick up stuff. I don't like to buy stuff on the road because I always lose it or it gets fucked up on tour as well. But I'm trying to think. I'm excited to hear the new Early Graves record that they're on tour with us, but they've been playing some of it on stage every night, and I'm gonna get a copy from them, damn it. They don't have them, you can steal it, because I know they have it on their computers, so I'm definitely stoked to hear that. I really dug a couple of the songs off the doom metal band that's playing at the Knitting coming up from Little Rock.
Okay.
Why is the name escaping me right now? They're really good though. It's pretty killer. I'll think of it in a second. I don't know. I'd have to go back and actually look at a list of what came out. And I'll be like, that. But I mean, there's lots of non-metal stuff I've listened to this year as well, and reissues of old stuff. I work at a record store, so I tend to nerd out pretty hard.
Yeah.
And it tends to be a lot of older stuff more so than newer stuff, but that's how it goes.
What kind of gear are you using? What's your setup?
Oh, it's really simple. And Nate, our other guitarist, and I use the same thing.
Okay.
We use Marshall JCM 2000 DSL guitar heads. They're 100 watt tube heads. We have two Marshall 1960 cabinets, and that's it. I jokingly say that my effects pedals are a tuner and a noise suppressor. Nate doesn't even need the noise suppressor. He just uses a tuner.
Okay.
That's it. We go straight in.
That's awesome.
Tune in standard. Yeah.
The easier the better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Simple as possible.
How was the tour set up?
We decided we wanted to do one more, a long headlining tour before we wrote the next record and went back into the studio and we were quiet for a while. So what we did was, it was basically, hey Andy, our booking agent, we want to play everywhere you can possibly book us. Let's do a tour. And then he came back with, hey, how about 63 shows in 65 days, all in the U.S.? And we said, all right. and that brings us to today. But as far as the other bands, we threw out a bunch of names and stuff and talked to a bunch of people about doing the tour. And it ended up Havoc and Early Graves
awesome.
Were both stoked to do it. And as well as Mutilation Rites from here in Brooklyn.
Where has In Skeleton Witch played, and where would you like to?
Japan. I really, really want to go to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping to get there 2013. It's looking like we may. That's the idea. Japan and South America, for sure. Those are in our sights.
After nearly 10 years, what makes you keep doing it?
I love it. I don't know how to do anything else. No, I really do love doing it. I love traveling. We've been fortunate enough to go over to Europe 6 times all over and see a lot of places, make a lot of friends, play on a lot of stages, meet a lot of our heroes. And it's just fun. I mean, I get to get up on stage every night with my, four of my best friends and play heavy metal. I can't really complain about that too much. So, and you have rough days and stuff, and it's not like we are, all buying new houses or anything like that. But we get by doing what we love, and each year, it gets a little bit better and it grows. And, the best day, or sorry, the worst day on the road is better than the best day in an office or a factory or,
Right.
any number of alternatives. This is what we want to do, so that's why we keep doing it.
What do you do in your downtime?
There's not much of it, and because we tour, it depends on the record cycle and stuff, but we're a typical year we're on the road 7 to 8 months.
Okay.
But during that time, visit family and friends, work on new material, get more merch designs ready. There's
right.
lots of upkeep of just, you know, ordering all the stuff we need for tour and logistics and all that other bullshit. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm home too, I still work at a bar and a record store for fun.
Okay.
Like, and sometimes I don't. It just depends how long I'm if I'm home for a while, I'll pop in and work a couple shifts, and that's always fun too. But mostly working on new tunes, planning for the future of the band and the next tour, and visiting family and trying to relax for a minute before you have to go back out and do it again.
That's awesome. Are there any songs that you haven't played live that you'd like to?
The last song on Breathing the Fire and Into the Flame, I would love to play that one live sometime. But it starts with just that drum intro and stuff, and
right.
I don't know how well it would go over live, but that's always one I would like to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my last question is, what's your superpower? Throws them off. I love it.
Absolutely threw me off. God, I don't know. Being able to cram in a van or a tour bus with the same four people year after year after year after year, and we still have fun doing it. It's funny. We still actually have a good time on the road, and most bands are like, "What the fuck is wrong with you guys? You're like laughing every day." You're like, it's because, you know, we have the best job in the world.
You have to enjoy it.
Yeah, so it's not really very super of a power. It's a high level of tolerance, maybe, and a shitty sense of humor.